Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit in creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. Pam Pence, Executive Director of Stable Planet Alliance, steers the collaborative leadership team, is a dedicated humanity and earth advocate, applying her business, somatic trauma healing, generative discussions facilitator, and spiritual guide skills wherever she is led. She's earned her MBA, CPA, and various certificates as yoga therapist, practitioner of healing modalities, and meditation teacher over several careers. Pam awoke to our ecological overshoot, an opportunity to evolve. After the rest is cut off, so I'm going to bring Pam to the stage. I think it cuts off in the middle of a word. So anyway, that's exciting. Well, this is called Getting Real, so it's real.
It's real.
Well, that's quite a bio, from CPA to yoga therapist. Wow, meditation teacher. It's like you must be sort of schizophrenic, right? Like, right?
Well, one of my skills is to reinvent myself, that's for sure. And I've done it several times.
Wow, I love that. I love that. All right, well, I can't wait to hear your story, I guess. Maybe. Now, where were you born? Let's start there.
Ooh, I was born in Long Beach, California, and I live all the way 20 miles away from that now. But my dad was a senior chief petty officer in the Navy, so we moved about six times by the time I was 15, and we finally settled back in Long Beach where I was born in the same house.
So they kept it all those years?
They did. They rented it out.
Isn't that nice? So now, is that where they were from? Was that where their roots were?
No, they are both South Dakotans. They are farm people. They went through the Depression and the Dust Bowl and had quite a life.
Wow. They lived through the Dust Bowl. So the Dust, I remember reading a book, I think it was down in Texas. So the Dust Bowl, obviously I don't know much about this, but it went all the way up.
The whole Midwest.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most interesting thing my dad ever said about that was when it was time to eat breakfast in the morning, they'd get their food. They'd put a piece of newspaper over their head. They'd lean over and they'd shovel in their food as fast as they could so the dirt wouldn't get in it.
Oh, so it was really that dry.
Yeah. Very bad.
Do you know how many years that lasted?
I don't. Maybe a couple. I'm not sure.
Now I want to Google it.
Yeah, it was. I read a book just recently about it. I couldn't tell you the name of the book right at the moment, but it was amazing. All the, you know, birds falling from the sky because they get too much dirt in their lungs, and just horrible.
It was 1930 to 1940. Holy.
Oh my gosh, 10 years. I had no idea.
Well, it peaked in 1934 and didn't fully end until the fall of 1939. That's still 5 years. Wow. Yeah, I read this book. It was fiction, but it was like...
Historical fiction, yeah.
Yeah. Woof. Mm-hmm. Just, you can't imagine. Wow. Okay. So, all right. So they survived the Dust Bowl, obviously.
They did.
They got to California. All right. So then you moved all over the place. How was that living as a... What did they...
Navy brat is what we affectionately call ourselves. You know, I was really young. I was in middle school when we finally got my dad finally got out of the military contracting and naval business. So for me, it wasn't too bad. I learned part of what you learn as being a Navy brat is to make friends, let them go, move on, do it again, be very flexible. So it was harder on my brothers who were older, you know, in high school. And so, yeah, it was harder for them.
How many
But
brothers?
for me, it was just where I lived.
Yeah. What, how old, how many brothers do you have?
I have two older brothers. One's 3 years older and one's five.
Wow. So, oh, so they were like 18 and 20. Yeah. Wow.
Much more difficult when you're
Yeah.
high school.
Okay. So you hit Long Beach at 15, and then what?
Oh, well, I graduated from high school, no big deal. I got a summer job, met the senior engineer, married him a year later. I married the boss
Wait.
at 19.
At 19, wow.
Yes. And we moved all three, four blocks away from my parents. And we finally moved to Orange County, which is 20 miles away. And had two kids after we decided, after 18 years of marriage, we decided, you know, I think we're going to stick together. Let's have kids. So one of the interesting things about me is I did things in my own time.
Wait, how many years later? 18?
18, yeah, 18 years
And you're
married. We had our
37?
first, I was 37, yeah.
So
My second one was born at 41.
Wow, yeah, mine were born late too. Wow, so you were just going along for 18. You didn't think you were going to stay together? Is that why?
No, that was just a joke.
Oh, okay.
No, we were just busy building our careers, and I'm not overly maternal, and so
Really?
part of my truth about motherhood is, I thought, well, you know, this life is getting kind of boring. What can we do to spice it up? Oh, let's have kids. That's a terrible reason to have kids, but that's how why we had them. And it was because I'm a nurturing person, but not particularly maternal, and so
And what does
it
that
was hard.
mean? What does
Well, it
that
was
mean?
hard. I was a very independent person. That's another naval trait, just become very self-reliant.
Right.
And I didn't like this little being so dependent on me. So it took a while to get used to it. It took me about a year to, you know, really settle in.
But you did?
Oh yeah, I did. I love my boys. I wish I had more time with them now. And I'm very proud of them. The world is a better place because they're here. So I'm
Oh,
very
yeah.
happy. I'm very proud of them.
And how old are they now?
27 and 31 next month.
Wow. Do they have their own kids yet?
No. One is married and for a couple of years, and they're talking about it. And the other one's not married yet and has no steady
Plans.
girlfriend right at the
Yeah.
moment. So.
Wow. Which one is married? The 27 or the 31?
31.
31. Nice. All right. So now, after you got married, did you go to college, even though you were
I
married?
did. I was in junior college when we were married. In fact, I
Right.
had a final the Friday before we got married. I remember that very clearly.
Did you have a big wedding or no?
No, it's pretty
No.
small. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not
Were
one for formalities, really.
Did your parents think you were too young, or did they get married young too?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question.
Did they think you should wait? Did they think you should?
My cousin, my cousin got, who was 2 years older than I, got pregnant before she was married. And my mom and dad are very conservative, and they were concerned Pam was going to follow in that those same footsteps. So when I started getting serious with Rod, they said, maybe you ought to get married.
Oh.
And so one of the other themes in my life is that being again, it's because of, I believe, my family origins. I was born in a patriarchy. I married into a patriarchy, and I didn't really do my own thing, really, truly. Felt free to do my thing until I was 50. So, I don't know why I transitioned to that, but oh, because my parents wanted me to get married.
Yeah.
So
So
I
you
did.
did. So you did. And he was okay with it.
Yeah.
So whose idea?
I don't think my to-be husband knew that that's what was going on at the time.
Oh, he thought it was his idea? Did he
well,
think
he he proposed and he thought I said yes because he said yes. And yeah.
And how old was he?
He's 7 years older than I am.
Oh, okay. So he was 26. Mm-hmm. You were a child bride. Wow.
I was.
So, okay. So whose decision was it to become, I'm assuming you were studying accounting when you were in college.
I did. Accounting and organizational development and healthcare.
And was that your choice or theirs?
Well, that was my choice. But again, in ninth grade, I took a Cooter interest test. And in that test, it said, you know, you would be really good at being a school teacher, a nurse, a minister, a accountant, or a mortician. And I said, I'll take accountant. Because I was very, very focused on myself, my masculine traits. I picked up a lot of traits from my dad because he's the guy who wore the pants in the family. And I didn't want to be like the mom who was, I think, put upon. That was my belief at that time. And so it seemed a lot better for me to be an accountant than a nurse or a teacher, which I refer to as feminine.
Right.
Job choices.
Now, what was I going to ask? Something about, what about your husband? Was he like your dad?
I married, yeah, in my mind, I was projecting onto him. I was projecting my father onto him. He had traits. It's not like it was out of the blue, but I made him more patriarchal, more controlling than he really was, because that's what I expected from a man.
But if you were the more, I'm not saying you were more masculine, but if you leaned toward more masculine, weren't there two of you then? Did you butt heads, or were you patriarchal enough to know your place? Do you know what I mean?
I was patriarchal enough to know my place. Yep.
Wow. Well, I think my...
It's a really interesting combination.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm just looking at mine. If my father definitely, like, you didn't mess with him.
Yeah.
But when he wasn't around, my mother was kind of, you know, like Weasley a little bit and like, run, he's coming. Do you know what I mean? So we were scared of him.
Yeah.
But I remember, yeah. And I remember my mother when I was married and, you know, I wasn't allowed to say anything bad about my husband. It didn't matter what he did. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. And I was like, what is that? You know what I mean? But I think that the way they were raised was you have to keep your husband happy at all costs. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only thing I could see. She wouldn't do this, you know? So I guess that's what you call patriarchal, right? It's very interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Woo. Okay.
Yeah. And it was very, I mean, as I look back now that I'm in my 60s and I look back and I see all this, it's like, wow, that was so pivotal, my whole childhood and the dynamics in the family. I mean, I know for everyone it is, but it's just amazing how deep it is. And still, I'm still working through it.
The patriarchal, you mean? Or the which part? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not only with my husband, but with business partners and people I'm attracted to learn from.
And what does that look like? Like, you don't want to speak up, you think you should be quiet, like, what does it look like?
My ideas don't matter. Be small. Don't create waves, all of that. Don't be too big for your britches. That was a favorite saying of my father's.
And was it just you because you were a girl?
Well, all three of us kids were afraid of him. So I don't, another dynamic that came out of that was we were not supportive of each other. When he came, we just kind of scattered.
Oh.
And so I really don't know my brothers that well. And it, because it started that way, we haven't really connected even as adults that much. My mom just died in February. So now I've kind of picked up the, okay, we're a family. We need to talk. So now we're, you know, we're getting together, you know, a couple times a month to talk. But until we didn't.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your father was like the military, like.
Yes, very much. Well, a senior chief petty officer is the person on a ship that's in charge of all the enlisted men. So he makes sure all those guys are in line and doing what they're supposed to be doing and doing it on time and right and very controlling. And it was hard to shift when he got home. I don't even know that he knew he could have, or maybe it would have been good if he had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when did he pass away?
About 10 years ago.
10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sorry about your mom.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. She was, you know, I really learned to appreciate her only in the last several years of her life. I don't know if it's because my dad wasn't there. I think it was more I was evolving as a person to embrace the feminine qualities, to embrace my nurturing self, because I've always been able to make friends and be there for my friends. And I was there for my kids and my husband. So it was there, but I didn't really appreciate it. I didn't even really see it. It's like, well, everybody does that. But then as my mom lived with me the last 3 years of her life, and I really noticed her nurturing qualities and the quality of her friendships and all of that. So.
Wow. Okay. I already have two full pages of notes. I'm like, did I write all that already? That's amazing. I'm like, wow. Okay. Yeah. So, all right. So you get married. You go to junior college. Then did you go to another college after that? For your,
I graduated from Long Beach State, the university, CSULB, as in accounting and finance. I got a job as a CPA. Well, you aren't a CPA right away, but I did my auditing work and the work that you need to do to become a CPA. I became a CPA, had my own firm for a couple of years.
Wow.
And then, you know, I look young for my age. I looked about, you know, at that point in time, I was what, 24, 25. I probably looked 19. Who's going to give their books and their records? Their financial wherewithal over to this 19 looking person that is working on her own. I wasn't in a firm. So that wasn't working out financially for me. Right. So I went into corporate America at that point as a accounting manager. Wow. And I did that for 20 years, 20
oh my
years,
God.
Something like that, 25 years.
How long did you try to do your own thing?
Just about 2-3 years.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I gave it a good go. That's my nature. If I do something, I stick to it, persistent. Yeah. And so I tried. I had a couple of good clients, but not enough to.
Yeah.
I wasn't fulfilled doing what I was doing. So.
Okay. So 20 years, wow. All right, so that takes you to what, 45?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. So what happened then?
Oh, and I got my MBA when I was 45, I think, right around there. I had one baby. I was nursing one baby and getting my MBA and working full time. And
how'd you do that? Wow. How'd you do that?
I have a really interesting way I did that. Well, my kids, neither one of them latched on well. I don't know if it was my nervousness or what, but so I pumped. Huh. And I would put a little cloak over me. I would hook myself up double duty and I would drive. It's a good thing I never got pulled over for anything.
Can you imagine? Yeah. I remember doing that. You got two. You're like. Like two boobs, right?
Yep. And they're going. Pump and
yeah. And then the baby, so the baby would take your milk from the bottle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. How long, how many months did it?
I did a full year. They say a year is important. So I did it for a year.
In your car. Always in your car.
Well, not always in my car, but that was one of my more unique ways to do it.
Smart. That's really smart. Really smart.
Yeah. And at work, we had a, there was myself and one other, and we had a broom closet that we would go in and pump.
And then you put in the refrigerator after?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you'd bring it home.
Right.
So what did they do during the day?
Oh, we had really great child care. One of the companies I worked for was Pacific Care Health Systems, which it's an HMO, was bought by United Healthcare. But they actually had a child care facility, not on site, but right next to it.
Oh.
It was very progressive. They had child size furniture, and they made, let the kids make a mess as they fed themselves mashed potatoes. And, you know, it was very, very somatic child care center. So we were really happy about that. And then that wasn't there when my second came along, but we found a local organization that was similar, not quite as good, but similar. So, and I begged him to take my son. So
did you have to pay for it?
Oh yeah. Well, not the one for the company one. No.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it got cut as soon as United Healthcare bought them, but it was good while it lasted.
Yeah. That's like your dream, right?
Yes. It was amazing. I would go over at lunchtime and see my baby.
Oh. Well, that was your first. Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And my mom and dad lived, you know, 20 miles away, and my mom babysat for us and infant sat. So
infant. Very cool. All right. So, at 45, you got your MBA and you left the corporate job. Obviously, your kids were just born then. No,
I left
born when you were 30.
37 and 41. So by the time I got my MBA, it was about 45, and I left. Pacific Care was going to be bought again. We were buying other HMOs. HMOs were buying us, and I was leading a process improvement team in finance. And every time we would be bought or sold, the CEO needed to, you know, demonstrate that they could cut heads and reduce costs, and so they would lop us off right away because we were not business critical. We were improving the business, but we weren't business critical. So they'd cut us off on a Friday. They'd hire us back as consultants on a Monday. But they wouldn't guarantee that. They wouldn't guarantee a thing until it actually happened.
So and all so weekend, you were doing all weekend
up to that, because you know, yeah, you were let go on Friday, but you knew for a couple of weeks that this was happening, and there was rumors before then. So,
but did you know you were going to be asked back, or was that a surprise?
None of us.
You were just out of a job. Wow.
Yep.
That's stressful. Yeah.
And then the third time they were going to do that, I just said, "Not doing it," and I left. I had heard about the heartless ways that United Healthcare System run their business. It was very cost conscious, and I just didn't want to sign on for that. When I originally joined Pacific Care, it was run by a man who started as the mailroom person, and he worked himself up. And it was a great place. Well, he had a child care center. It was a great place to work.
Yeah.
And when I saw that coming down the pike, I just said, I'm out of here. I'm done with corporate America. I just quit. Didn't have anything planned. Had no prospects. And a couple of weeks before that, I kind of knew this was happening. This was coming. And I told someone, a friend of mine, you know, I think I'll become a yoga teacher. Now, this is somebody who's making, you know, really good money as a corporate business process person doing mergers and acquisitions. And I thought, I'll just do that. Well, sure enough, that's what I did. I have to really watch what I say.
So had you already been doing yoga?
I had been doing it. Yeah, not a whole lot, but yeah, I had been do I was most mostly I was doing weightlifting because I had a really bad back and I was trying to resolve that with weightlifting, but I started doing a little yoga to see if that would help my back as well.
So, did you love yoga?
Oh yeah. I mean,
You
it
do.
was amazing. It really helped my back. I eventually, after a year, quit bodybuilding and weightlifting, and I switched 100% over to yoga. I was waiting for that. So by the way, this whole time I'm very spiritual. I was raised what do you call it? A conservative Christian. I was a Lutheran, and then I went after my two boys were born. We went to Unity of Tustin, and I was looking for an organization that believed that Christ is a prophet or some very wise person connected to the divine, but that we all were children of God, and we didn't have to go through, priests or whoever to talk to God. So I was looking for something much more free than what I was used to. And so I looked in the Yellow Pages back then, and I found Unity of Tustin, and I called them up and I asked them about their beliefs, and I loved it. So I went, and so that was all part of this. So I had it really expanded my spirituality at L Unity of Tustin. It's like
How
many,
close
it's
was
just
it?
all paths lead to the same God kind of a thing.
Yeah, how close was that, like, to your house? Was it right in your
Yeah,
area?
4 miles away.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't know if you know, but Adi Shante would come, and David Hawkins, and I don't know, really luminary people would come. It was m the minister's gift to find people who were just getting started but were really powerful. And she'd bring them to the church. And so my spirituality really expanded. And so yoga was. I was looking for that. I read about that breakdown on the yoga mat where you just kind of melt and you're doing yoga and you start crying. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for my emotional breakthrough. Let's go. Well, it never happens. It never did. It never has happened.
Still waiting,
I
still
am
waiting. Yeah.
still waiting.
Wow. So, okay. So you're doing that at the same time. Did you have, but you had to get yoga trained, right?
Oh
Take.
yeah, I've got several certifications. I do everything, to the hilt. So
Yeah.
yeah, I've got several certifications and in meditation as well.
Where did you learn that? Where did you learn the meditation?
Meditation, my certification is through iREST. It's in it he's it's Richard Miller's work, and he's up in San Francisco, and his it's based on Vedanta meditation, and he took it beyond that, just of about being in the field. You are the field, you are divine, you're part of, and being quiet, feeling into that nothingness, into that fullness. So that was all part of the training. But the reason why I picked Richard is because I had decided to. When I left Pacificare, I went to train to be a yoga teacher, and I decided that I was going to work with the military as my cohort. And I really short story, I was driving to a yoga marketing seminar, and on the way there was a billboard with a guy, a Marine in this full uniform saluting. I saw it, I just started crying. With my military background, makes sense. But I started crying. I go, well, I guess that's my niche. So when I showed up to the marketing seminar, I just kind of ran with that. And when I got back, there was an email in my inbox saying, would you like to be trained to work with the military? Just amazing. So I said yes, and I took that training as well as Richard's. But Richard Miller with iREST, he had done a lot of work at Walter Reed Medical Center with PTSD patients.
Wow.
And so he was just a natural person to learn from. Really good person.
Maybe that was your breakdown when you saw the God.
Yeah.
It just wasn't on the mat.
That's right. But I was on my way to yoga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you said you work with military, you work with them teaching yoga?
So I actually decided not to do active yoga. I mean, active military. I did go to a couple of bases and did some yoga with them. And I don't know, I just didn't resonate as well. So I decided, well, how about veterans? So that's when I cold called on the VA. I put together a brochure about IRS meditation and how it helps with PTSD. And I, you know, the benefits of yoga. I put this little packet together and I went to the VA and I stopped in at the PTSD department in the mental health division. I stopped at the women's mental health clinic. I stopped at the substance abuse clinic. So I went around and dropped the stuff off. And the next day I got a call from the director of the Women's Mental Health Center. They had just lost their movement volunteer who helped, you know, who did movement with the women.
Oh.
And asked if I wanted to come do yoga. So I did.
Wow. And they paid you? That was like a paying job?
Well, it wasn't at first. I worked for a year or two, maybe 2 years volunteer. Now, I had, you know, Rod and I didn't have kids for 18 years, but we had full-time professional careers. So we were stashing money.
Yeah. Wow.
So so I was able to do that. And then they saw the value and their two departments paid me. The primary care department paid me for working with pain management with primarily Vietnam vets, but there were also Gulf War vets and what have you. And then the Women's Mental Health Center also paid me. I was the very first paid yoga therapist in the VA on payroll.
So did you bring in the meditation with the yoga? Was it?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I had also done a lot of work with certificates in various healing modalities. So I'm familiar with healing touch and EFT. I don't know if you know some of those, but it's working with meridians. And so I put it all together and primarily yoga and breathing with the PTSD. I'm sorry, with the pain management vets in the primary care department. With the women, I was primarily working with women with military sexual trauma, which is extremely prevalent in the military. Both men and women, but I was actually working primarily with women. I did do some work with the men as well. So it was a lot of learning to love themselves, learning to trust others, as well as their physical pain and 'cause they all pretty beat up physically as well as mentally.
So when you say the men... The men were abused by the men too?
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's really a pressure cooker when you're in the military. I mean, you don't have outlets. They're out in the middle of nowhere or whatever. And you pick on the weak ones.
Mm. Wow. All right. On that note, all right, we're going to take our, that's great. Yeah,
it was very, very fulfilling work, I must say.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you made a huge difference. So thank you for that work. All right, when we come back, we're going to go to our commercial break now. And then is it time for reading The New Republic of the Heart when we come back? Or is there more?
Absolutely. No, that's...
All right, think about if there's anything else. We'll be right back.
Okay.
With more of the story. Thank you. Parents and teachers, imagine a classroom where every child belongs, where kids are seen, known, and part of a real community. That's the world Kikori creates. Kikori isn't just another program. It's hands-on, playful, and filled with activities kids love, all while building skills that matter for life. Confidence, kindness, resilience, and teamwork. Kids learn how to regulate themselves, connect with others, and discover the joy of learning that lasts a lifetime. And it works. Schools using Kikori have seen behavioral referrals drop by 25%, and teachers save hours of planning time. Whether you're a teacher building a safe, positive classroom, or a parent wanting your child to grow socially and emotionally, Kikori makes it easy to bring these life skills into everyday learning. So if you're ready to help kids grow stronger, kinder, and more confident while creating a community where every child belongs, visit KikoriApp.com. That's KIKORI, where kids thrive together. Hey, it's Hillary from the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Life can be messy, raw, and real. And sometimes we're afraid to feel vulnerable. We're afraid to be that real self. Well, that's exactly what the Getting Real with Hillary Show and Getting Real Movement is all about, being our true selves. Every week, I bring you stories of transformation, authenticity, and hope. People getting real with their struggles, their faith, and their breakthroughs. So don't miss a thing. Subscribe to my weekly newsletter today. You'll get stories, links to everything new, and how to create a life you love every week directly to your inbox. You can also find my books on Amazon, my courageous and riveting memoir, The Second Piece of French Toast, in case you feel stuck in your life and want to get inspired. How I came out about my no sex life and my marriage, and my second book, Real Talk. That one will get you speaking up in ways you've been too afraid to do so, and really creating amazing freedom. And my third book, How to Stop Fixing Yourself and Start Having Fun. The name is called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. Find links to everything and subscribe to my YouTube channel, Getting Real with Hillary, and you'll find the links in the header. So visit, and you can also visit gettingrealwithhillary.com, because the real you is worth it and wants to come out. So thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you saw the commercial, if you want to bring, just like Pam's talking about, bringing this in to children, social-emotional learning, having them connect to each other, to themselves, we can start it at a young age. Go to KikoriApp.com and schedule a meeting with them, because it really can change the planet where we need it with the young people. You saw my books. You see the logos of the sponsors going across the bottom. Thank you to all of you for making this show possible. And now we will bring Pam back so we hear the rest of her story. I can't wait to hear what happened. I mean, so that was reinventing. One was accounting. Two was this meditation and yoga. Are we ready for three?
Ready for three.
Or is there anything else you left out before we go forward?
I'm sure there's other things, but I'm ready to go on.
All right. We're ready to move on. All right.
Ready to move on.
All right.
It's not letting dust grow under our feet.
Yes.
Grass grow under our feet, I should say.
Okay. So you're doing all this stuff, helping the women at the Sennel, helping the veterans. Mm-hmm. And then what happens?
And then COVID hit.
Oh, COVID.
And I was, in the work I was doing, I was bringing physically healthy people into the hospital for the work that I was doing.
Mm.
Well, nobody knew anything about COVID or what. So it shut down and regrouped. And so we all were put on furlough. And then they continued to put me on furlough until September. So we closed, the actual hospital shut down for in February. I mean, it was really ER, but, ex parts were continuing, but like what I was doing and mental health was pretty well shut down. And so I had also been on the board of Unity of Tustin. My term had expired right at that same time. And I was putting a lot of time into my board work there. So all of a sudden, I didn't have my job and I didn't have Unity of Tustin. I had a lot of time on my hands. So as I always do, I jump in and do something else. So I started going to various online groups, spiritual groups. People would recommend me to various podcasts and organizations. And so I just popped around, was researching this and that. And I was recommended to go to a spiritual organization called the New Republic of the Heart. And it was an experiment with Terry Patton to build a spiritual community online. And while I was there, I read his book, which is by the same name, A New Republic of the Heart, An Ethos for Revolutionaries. And in that book, he outlined the wicked problems that humanity was facing. The global warming, biodiversity loss, overpopulation, et cetera. And so I read through his book and I said, wow, I had my head down working at Unity of Tustin, working at VA, raising my kids. And I had no idea what all was going on. And so I said, okay, well, what's mine to do? And in the book, he did speak about overpopulation. For whatever reason, that's what resonated with me. And by the way, overpopulation, as in all places, are overpopulated. This is not a North-South thing. It's given our consumption rate, the U.S. is one of the most overpopulated because of our consumption rate. We consume about five times what we create in our nation. So anyway, I did some research on that. I found a couple of organizations that were focused on population. I volunteered with them for a while. I got on their listservs and their discussion groups. And one of the organizations that I came across was Stable Planet Alliance. And their focus was on overshoot. And overshoot means overpopulation, overconsumption, how was a good way to say that? The trash that we create, the amount of waste that we create. And AI technology being out of whack. So that's all considered overshoot. And so I was working with them, creating podcasts, interviewing people, running their organizational meetings and what have you. And then the the executive director needed to move on, and I looked around and nobody else was standing there. So I said, sure, I'll give it a run. Okay. I haven't been out of corporate America for 15 years at that point. And, you know, things have moved on since then. But anyway, I said, yeah, I'll give it a try. And I must say, I want to put a plug in for this Disney movie, Moana. I think every young girl, especially girls, should watch Moana. In that movie, she has a mentor. The mentor comes and goes. This is sometimes flaky, but Phoebe, that my executive director, was not flaky. But, she has a mentor, and then she develops her self-confidence through all the trials that she's put through. Mm. It's not that she was prepared already. It's just that she said yes. And she became prepared as she went along. She developed her courage, her skills, as she is going on this adventure. And it's I've watched that movie several times just because it so resonated with me and my particular position at that time. So,
is that a paid position or were you volunteering?
I was volunteering. I'm still volunteering. I'm not a great fundraiser. I should say I'm not a fundraiser. Oh. And I need one, but I don't have one. But as I said, you know, Rod and I did well in the real estate market and what have you. So we're okay financially. And this is where my passion lies is to wake up the world, to increase consciousness, to recognize that we are amazing creatures. We are amazing beings, and that we have the opportunity to co-evolve, to intentionally participate in our own evolution, to live from our higher selves, to heal through our traumas, to use all of this great intelligence that we have and technology, and to do something more, much more productive than what we're doing with it right now.
Like what? Like what would be examples?
Well, you actually mentioned it earlier. One of the things we believe is that we need to invest in childcare and childhood. The first 1,000 days or whatever. That's one of Peter Fakowski, someone we both know. Mm-hmm. One of his programs or thoughts is to really invest in children's first 1,000 days and more, of course. But
is that the first 3 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, if we would do that, we would have less trauma. We would have less crime. We would have better health. I mean, the whole world would be benefited by that.
And how, just so up until three, what are we doing? Do you know what I mean? Like, how are we investing in them? Just because they're not taken care of, because they're left alone, because they're not taught. Like, what exactly is he saying to do in those?
Well, the way part of that equation is to educate parents. Prepare parents better to be parents.
Okay.
So it starts with, okay, as a parent, it's more than about feeding them and making sure they have clothes when they get to school. It's about nurturing them. It's about helping them feel like they're important and that that you challenge them, that they learn resilience, that they have to reach for that cookie or that toy. You don't just hand it to them. You allow them to be self-reliant and build character in that way. And so, and that loving and nurturing part is something that I knew I was well taken care of physically as a child. I didn't feel particularly nurtured.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that I'm still working through. So that the parenting is a part of it. So well-prepared parents. I just heard it yesterday, the village raises the child.
Right.
You know, we need to bring back community so that it's not this single full-time working parent that's raising two kids. You know, they just don't have the capacity to give them the love and the nurturing and all of that that children need.
So does he have a plan for how to do this?
Oh, Peter, I don't know. I know that this is one of his ideas.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. I just wonder, it would be such a culture shift. Do you know what I mean? I think it's awesome. Yes. But
well, and that is exactly what Stable Planet is focused on, whole system change. We need to shift from this domination control way that a lot of the world works, to partnership, respect, relating, loving, nurturing, appreciating, complimenting, supporting each other. That's number one. That's what's neat. And then the other really big category is to ecologically live within our boundaries, the Earth's boundaries. Because right now, we're consuming about 2 Earth's worth of materials every year. So every year, you know, we have a savings account that's been built over millions of years with aquifers and ecosystems and, you know, all of that. And every year we take out 1 year's worth of resources out of the savings account. So, and we've been doing this for quite a while, and that's why the Earth is struggling. So, how we do all of that is, and this is why Stable Planet is involved in education and giving people opportunities to practice sharing what I just described, that this is what we could be doing. That's not what we're doing now. How do we get from what we're doing now to what we could be, to this evolved species? And it's within our ability, and we have all this in us already. It's just that we have trauma and we are very distracted. But anyway, so we ask people to learn about the what's so about the world and the system that's driving it, and then to share about how we, as the public, if we get educated and speak to our neighbors, our friends, our family, our PTA, our Rotary Club, or whatever, about this, and we all collectively see that there's something much better that's available, then we either, number one, take on leadership, whether it's political or it's our PTA or our local city council, or we vote different people in that have a vision of something better than what we're doing. And that has nothing to do with Democrats and Republicans. It has to do with who are we as humans, and what do we want for ourselves, but also for future generations. And that's humanity. Humanity Day right there.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. So if people wanted to learn more, get educated, take on leadership, where do they go? Do they go to your website?
They can go to our website, stableplanetalliance.org. Okay. There's a tab on the top called League of Evolutionary Catalysts. That's what we call the people who have gone through a training that we have created. We call them evolutionary catalysts. They don't have all the answers. They don't have all the skills they need. They're like Moana. They're just going to jump in there and do our best, and we're going to learn along the way. Humility is really important. We know we don't, there's a lot we don't know, and systems work. There will always be things we don't know. Right. And so we just, you know, are willing to find the courage inside to speak out about a different world we want to live in.
Wow. You've taken on something very big, but very important, right?
Yeah.
Just changing the world.
Right. That's right. Whole system change.
We'll call you Pam Moana Pence, right?
There you go. I like
it. How do you spell Moana? I can't remember.
Is it Moana, I think.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Moana. Yeah.
I'll have to watch that again. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't watched it until I actually was doing some inner work to be prepared for being an executive director. And I was feeling, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm out of control. I don't have the confidence to do this. I don't have the skills. And I don't know how it came. I don't remember how it came into my awareness, but I watched Moana. I go, that's it.
So, wow.
I have a mentor, and I just jump in and do it.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for all your work, for all your... That's quite a path. I love it. You did reinvent yourself 3 times. I don't know if there was anything that we...
Well, the fourth was just the executive director from being a social activist. I mean, it's a whole different deal.
Yeah. And you never went back to the yoga and the meditation?
Well, I did meditation on our last call. So we have an 8-week training that we've just piloted. Tonight is the last class. And I brought in meditation. I've also brought in meditation. I'm a Toastmaster. I just gave a speech yesterday. Well, I asked everyone to close their eyes and listen to some words. So it's all working.
That's great. I love that. All right. And in our final 30 seconds, what would you like to leave people with as a message? Like, where do you see the world in 5 years? All this worked. How would you see?
I would say, we're really powerful. We're together, we're really powerful. And to don't give up, to it's going to get to I believe it's going to get really tough on the next 20 years. But don't go down swinging, be part of the answer and support the younger generation that's coming up, that's going to live through all of it.
Get through the dust bowl, right?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for telling your story. Thank you for the work you're doing
Yeah.
for the world. It's
Great. Thank you for
really
this
amazing.
opportunity.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was really
Yeah.
fun.
Yeah. This is a great interview. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you.
Thank you. All right. Bye, everyone. Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony, and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together if you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.